The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Incomparable, number 622, July 2022.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Incomparable. I am your host, Jason Snell, and in this episode, we're going to be talking about the Marvel Cinematic Universe movie, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness, from 2022. It was recently in theaters, now it's on Disney+. And I have been joined by a wonderful and large panel of people to talk about the latest. Let's check in with Benedict Cumberbatch and see how his accent is doing. Joining me are Lisa Schmeiser. Hello.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
I will now introduce the rest of the panel using an American accent. Glenn Fleischman is here. Hello.
Sorry, you got the other Glenn, but I'll do my best.
Okay, that's that works. Monty Ashley is here. Hi.
By the crimson bands of Sidorak, I greet you, Jason.
Thank you. Nice. From the hoary hosts of Hoggoth. Eric Ensign is here. Hello.
I'm bringing you a multiverse of Erica's all in one.
And I believe for the very first time, not only on this Mothership podcast, but I believe for the first time in more than 600 episodes of history of The Incomparable, someone from south of the equator, it's Sarah Bickerton. Hello.
Hello. This is me being reasonable.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh. Oh, wow. So good. So good.
Very nice.
So, Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness is obviously, I want to say, is the sequel to the original Doctor Strange film. There were about 90 movies with Doctor Strange in it in between those two, all various Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, so it's kind of hard to say that it's a sequel to Doctor Strange.
It isn't a sequel to Doctor Strange.
Yeah, I mean, it isn't. It is only contractually, Monty, only in the sense that Benedict Cumberbatch probably has a very specific contract for three Doctor Strange movies, separate from his other appearances. But otherwise, yeah, it follows on from different things, including, I think, most notably WandaVision, most notably and most problematically. But it's not really about what Doctor Strange was about, the original.
I think it's a sequel to What If.
Ah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know.
I could see that. I mean, What If is a multiverse story of all sorts of different wild kind of universes. So
I didn't do all the homework, apparently.
It's okay.
Wait,
there's too much.
Can you not get What If in Canada, or did you not like the approach the show had?
That's the animated thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
We're going to have to get another okay. Erica, I guess.
other, what I've admired about Erica is how steadfast she is, when she's like, it's not for me.
No, I love that.
I know me, and
it's also my favorite thing.
That's, I'm a multiverse. Okay. I'm not that wide of a multiverse, I guess.
So, well, Erica, let me say this. If you liked the part of the movie I was fond of, which is the Illuminati, particularly Captain Carter, there's a whole What If episode about Captain Carter.
You just watch that one.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you could. Yeah.
Or you could just read a recap of it if you're like, no.
Or not even do that.
The
thing, confusingly, maybe for contractual reasons also, in release schedules and pandemic, my 15-year-old and I watched this twice, and
my for contractual reasons.
For contractual reasons. And Alex said, wait, why isn't there more Spider-Man in the multiverse? And I'm like, I think this movie was supposed to be made before.
It was.
So there's that interlock. Yep. So we watched the Spider-Man film and then we're thinking, oh, well, this will reference that, forgetting that this film was made before that, right?
Something no, like they that. Changed it. Oh. They you can actually see from the Spider-Man trailer, you can see that they did some reshoots because the sequence changed. And so they also obviously inserted one line in this movie, which is like, oh, I did a thing involving Spider-Man.
Yeah. What do you know about the multiverse? What? Well, I know, I barely visited it. It's like, but you just held,
But there's a thing that bothered me a little bit about that. And when they're sitting in the cafe and talking about like there are multiple insect people now, we've got, it's like they mention Spider-Man, which sweet. Okay. But isn't, all of them supposed to have forgotten him?
Oh.
Oh no, they remember Spider-Man. They just don't remember that Peter Parker is Spider-Man. Yes.
Oh, that's right. So they remember Spider-Man, but they've forgotten Peter Parker.
That's right. But it is a case where I believe this breaks open the multiverse and then the Spider-Man story happens after it, and then the release schedule's changed, and so instead it's sort of like, hey, you remember that Spider-Man thing? Well, let me tell you.
One of the things that would have been better had it been done a little bit differently.
I thought we were going to have to add a goof to the IMDb page.
I'm sure there are plenty. Yeah, I'm sure there are plenty. Thank you.
I need to go read it.
They're full of them. So this is a weird movie to talk about, and I'm going to lay my cards on the table right here, which is I kind of loved this movie, but there are parts of it that I really don't like and I think were very, very poorly executed. And so I struggle, like overall, I enjoyed the movie. And yet I find one particular aspect of it utterly baffling about how it was executed. So I will lay my cards on the table and then I can see what everybody else has to say. And I want to get into some of the details. So this was directed by Sam Raimi, who you may know. He directed the Evil Dead movies. He directed the Spider-Man original trilogy. Which is like, woohoo. Just the last third of that was sadder than the first two-thirds, which were great. He is a really interesting director. Darkman, too. Like, interesting director. Brought into the MCU.
A Simple Plan.
Yeah, that's true. No, I mean, so many interesting movies from Sam Raimi, right? So he's brought in to do a Marvel movie when the directors of this movie exited because it is a studio plot, right? He comes in and he directs this movie with, I think, a lot of flair. I think it's got a little bit of his flavor mixed in with the Marvel flavor. I think that's good. And what I like about this movie is just like the first movie, actually, which is every part of it that's weird, every part of it that looks weird or has a gross thing or has a bizarre image, I love it. And honestly, for me, that carries the day. That I really like it when a Marvel movie makes me see things that I don't expect and that it feels like they went the extra mile in order to do some stuff that maybe I haven't seen in a movie before or certainly in a Marvel movie before. So that part of it, I really appreciate it. And I could feel Sam Raimi and his visual sense kind of working. Even the really gross stuff, like when they harpoon a monster through its eyeball and pull the eyeball out. I'm like, in a Marvel movie, huh? Okay, that's interesting. However, if the thing that makes Marvel movies most notable is their connective tissue, the thing that this connects the most to is WandaVision. And Wanda is the villain, and I would argue her character kind of doesn't make sense at almost any point.
Explain that. I've heard that complaint, and I purposely did not look into anyone's explanation for it. When I saw the movie, I thought, oh, sure, Wanda's crazy. She's a villain now. She's a villain in the comic books a lot. Why doesn't it make sense?
For me, I think that at the end of WandaVision, she's in a sad place, but maybe in a little bit of a better place, and that we've also seen her be a reasonable person in the past at times. And so at the beginning of this movie, and I think the beginning where she's introduced is the part that is most mishandled, because she just appears, first off, hanging a lantern on the fact that you literally went to the villain when you're trying to find out who the villain is doesn't solve the fact that you did something weird with your movie. Just saying, oh, look, that's a coincidence. Like, yeah, it is. Maybe you should have thought about that. But she's just like, boom, oh, actually, Steven, I am super evil and I'm trying to suck the life force out of this girl and take her powers. America Chavez, who can walk between multiverses. And I thought, like, what I wanted to see from Wanda was, I could come up with a list of them. I could imagine her being, like, tempted and tempted by the darkness, or dreamwalked from another more evil Wanda, or her sort of slide into doing things that she kids herself into thinking are good. But the way it came off, she felt much more just like, I'm evil now. And I didn't really think I didn't buy it after watching WandaVision. I thought that mm-hmm. was not, she just was one note, which was, I'm bad. And then at the end, when she kind of tries to do good, I'm like, yeah, you could have set that up, but I never really felt that. So if there are other people, I think, agree about Wanda being the problem here. So I'll cede the rest of the floor to anybody else who would like to talk about it.
I think the transition was really ineptly handled because I am sure, not I'm sure, you can never be sure unless you're in the room with the people making the decision. I would suspect that the logic that went into this is, we're going to show that post WandaVision credits scene where you see her in her remote cabin by a lake, as is the rightful province of all Marvel people who go off the grid. And while she's taking a nap, another part of her super powerful witchy thing will be reading the Darkhold. And they were like, all of the comics nerds will realize the Darkhold is warping her personality and her judgment. And therefore, when they see Doctor Strange 2, they'll realize this isn't the real Wanda, this is the warped Wanda. And so her turn at the end is her being redeemed once she's been let loose from the Darkhold. And the problem with that explanation is it exists in people's heads and there is no support for it anywhere in Doctor Strange 2. And although they make a big deal about pointing out in Doctor Strange too, through the whole thing that, oh, the Darkhold turned Doctor Strange into, you know, a completely jerky weirdo who does do interesting musical battle. And at the end of Doctor Strange 2, you know, he gets the third eye popping open because he used the Darkhold to control his zombie body and there's a price to be paid. That idea that there is a price to be paid for the magic that you do, and there's a corruption of your soul, like, that's never made apparent with Wanda. And instead, it's just painted as, oh, this person continues to do terrible things even after she hijacked a town. And I feel like it's a real disservice to the character, because it would not have been hard to put in a scene or two where it's really evident that the Darkhold is the one that's manipulating her.
I don't think the Darkhold is the one that's manipulating her. That's
neither
thing.
Do I, and that's why I hate it. Well,
like you say that there's no support for that in the movie. That's because that's not what's happening. I think Wanda is evil. She's a villain. She's a comic book villainess doing villainous things.
Yeah. And so this is what I was, and I want to hear from Erica, especially, and anybody else, but I'll just throw in there. One of the, I think in a movie divorced from all other movies, Wanda being the evil villain is fine. The problem is, it's the MCU. Everything's connected. It's all supposed to build on each other. And if that's the case, then I feel like Wanda being this character needs to have been properly set up so that I, as somebody who's seen literally all the MCU stuff, could buy it. And when I saw this, I was like, what? So that I feel like that's maybe the disconnect there, is that she is a comic book villain, and that in and of itself isn't the issue. But like, based on any of the other stuff that I've seen, it felt to me like the movie was saying, oh yeah, Wanda's evil now. And that was it. Like that was the end. Erica, what were you thinking?
Well, yeah, I think I'm here to represent like your middle of the road mainstream MCU viewer who has seen most of the stuff, but not literally everything, and has never read any of the comics except for Ms. Marvel. So I never thought that Wanda was a villain. Yes, she started out like she was a baddie who then became good. And to me, that was like her superhero origin story. So I always kind of saw Wanda as a hero that was slightly conflicted. Like, that's what I thought the MCU was telling me. And that was one of the reasons that I loved WandaVision so much, because, you know, we got to see this story where, you know, finally we have a woman who is centered, and, you know, she's dealing with her grief on the big screen, which, you know, big screen being my large television.
That's big enough.
Fair enough.
And I really enjoyed it so much. And she got to the end of it and like she came through all of this. And it was such a like, maybe it was based on when I was watching it, but it was a really cathartic experience for me as a viewer. And I was like, yes, like, look at she dealt with her grief. She's gotten to the end of it. I had kind of like sort of forgotten about that, the glowy book at the end of the credits. I think I read that more as she's got a little bit more to go through, because like, I swear to God, that show teased more Wanda and Vision, you know, some form of Vision in the future, which now I feel like I don't even want anymore. So here, when she's just bad, I was just like, well, did you even watch WandaVision? Turns out the answer is no for the writer. And I really didn't feel like, I don't know. I didn't like her as a villain without giving me a better reason than like, oh, I wanted to be a mom, but I'm not actually that also. So basically, yeah. The reason that I said that I come to you as a multiverse of Erica's is I actually like, I kind of love this movie, but I just have to sort of ignore the entire villain and villain motivation to let myself love the other things that I love.
Yeah, I came out of the movie theater for my very first time coming out of an MCU or a WCU, which I'm calling it the Wong Cinematic Universe at this point. Wong is everywhere. But I came out for the very first time and I went, I didn't enjoy an MCU film. I genuinely didn't enjoy it. And my major point was like, I have read a Wanda in the comics, and I know that she's often a villain. She's kind of like the Poison Ivy of Marvel to a certain extent. But that's not this Wanda. Wanda here is this having gone through WandaVision, which was this amazing, as Erica's mentioning, this amazing, complex, nuanced discussion of this character, getting into the depth, seeing the multiple facets, the multiverse of Wanda to a certain extent, and getting into her in a really complex way that I was thought was groundbreaking for a woman that was dealing with so much. And then what we get here is just one-dimensional villainhood. And it was like, it's like this Wanda was completely different from the... I was looking forward to this film to see more of the Wanda that I'd loved in WandaVision. And nope, not even present. It was like moustache twirling in places. There was a couple of points where both Wong and Strange... confronted her about like how stupid it was to go to try to find her children in other universes, and she kind of was like meh, hand wavy, okay, don't care. And it was like, really, if the hole there for the character is so gapingly wide that other characters are pointing it out, and yet the way in which the writing is getting around it is just to go hand wavy meh, moustache twirl, evil cackle, do the thing, I'm like, I wanted the Wanda that we had before, and it was like, nope. And my other part is, and I think we can leave this for another discussion, is I really hated what happened to America Chavez from the comic books. My America Chavez from the comic books. But we can talk about that later. But that's,
I thought there was, watching it the second time particularly, I felt like the first time, I mean, I think it's a bunch of films crammed together is part of it. It's we were watching it the second time, and at like an hour 40, we're like, well, it's over. There's a whole other, or hour 30 or something. There's a whole other new thing that's super horror oriented that I thought was greatly, greatly conceived coming. So I think it suffers from too many idea problem, which I think the better Marvel films have, you know, shaved off. But I felt in the second view that people in the movie were shouting at Wanda, this is, like you're saying, Sarah, this is a terrible idea. Specifically, let me enumerate the reasons why, where, because of the evolution of your character up to this point, you should understand it. And she's like, no. And like, no, let me please shout this out again at every time. So like, there's five or six times people like, and then someone's like, what are you going to do with the other Wanda? And she's like, bleh. She's going to kill the other Wanda. Oh, why do you need this power? Why don't you just send her there? Oh, because they might get sick. And then I'm going to steal body parts or people or take them to other. It's like, ugh. But I think the filmmakers, I think, tried to do is make a certain kind of unfundamental unfairness, is that she claims, and I forget, they talk about it being, you know, and we see this in Loki also, I guess, and throughout the Marvel universe in comics, is there's a huge number of parallel universes. Maybe it's infinite. I think it's supposedly infinite, but we only usually get glimpses into some subset of it. And she said something like, this is the only universe in which I don't have children. They're in basically every other one. So this is the one in which things suck the worst. And then America Chavez on the inverse says, I only exist. There's only one of me across the entire multiverse. And so I know they're trying to set up a little thing there. So Wanda has dreams every night that she's seeing all these other happiness. And so that's plaguing her. They're trying to set up this motivation, but it really, I don't know. It did feel like a film full of people saying, Wanda, you are now better than this because we have evolved you through all this action. You're a really good person. So can we just talk about things? And she just keeps saying, no.
Yeah. It felt to me like there was a script review where somebody listed all the reasons why they didn't think this made sense. And rather than adjust what the character does and says to make it work, they just had all the other characters shout those things at her and have her go, nah.
And for as long as this film is, there's actually a couple of pieces missing. I noticed that the second time too. Alex and I turned to each other and were like, wait, did we miss? There's only one goof listed at IMDb, by the way, I checked, and it's not in there. But at the point, I don't want to jump too far ahead. Can I say one now? Does it matter?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Well, so near the end of the film, America Chavez is having her life force or her powers drained from her. And then it cuts to Doctor Strange and other universe. And he's doing all this stuff. And then he gets there and then he's fighting the spirits and whatever. All this is going on. And we cut back to the Darkhold Mountain, Wondergore. And Wanda has lost interest in draining the power from, and she's doing something totally different. So there's something missing there where we're like, she should already have finished this task. And I thought what was going to happen is Doctor Strange was going to arrive and she's like, it's too late, I've already done it. And then something has to result from that. She has to wind time back or God knows what. But
I thought Wanda was pretty villainous in WandaVision, frankly. I will say the thing that made me question her motivation is that those kids are boring.
Yes! That wrong. Ice cream song, Monty.
Written by someone who has never been around actual children. Groaning over how awful it was.
Lauren said whoever did the rewriting on this movie wasn't a mom for so many reasons. But I would say also this is something they can't put in the movie because it stops the movie cold, which is there's an infinite number of universes out there, there's a universe where Wanda has died and the children are still alive.
Exactly.
Yeah. You can just swoop in when she gets hit by a car and say, oh, I'm fine now. And
I'm
then you
okay.
Just go on with your life.
Pick up a bunch of medicine. Yeah.
Pay no attention to that dissolving corpse there. That is, I don't know what that is. It's not me. I'm here.
Well, see, America doesn't have full control over her powers yet.
And until the minute that she does, then it's super convenient. Right. No, what I want to know is in this infinite number of universes, like you're telling me that nobody has ever figured out Wanda Maximoff as a threat before? Like, no, because like this is the thing that bugs me about Universe 838, where Stephen Strange is such a threat, they have to put him down. Like, they've never heard of Wanda Maximoff in this universe, but she's a witch who can fly around and shoot fireballs. Like, you would think that somebody somewhere would have her on a registry.
I guess she's happy with her kids in every other universe, so it doesn't matter.
They don't have her as a backup Avenger or anything like that, and it made no sense to me that no one ever had a fail-safe plan in place for Wanda in any other universe.
She's powerful enough to have stayed under the radar because she's happy with her kids.
It makes no sense in this movie or in the MCU period that you have someone like Wanda Maximoff and literally none of her coworkers or anybody else who has ever met her is like, hey, we should keep an eye on the bereaved witch who can put towns in bubbles. Why are we just like...
They lost track of her. Whatever happened to Wanda?
Track of Vision. Where's White Vision? I hate calling him White Vision, but where's White Vision?
Zombie villain.
You can argue that they mishandled Wanda for a number of reasons and in a number of ways, but like Wanda has never made sense in the MCU because they do this thing where she's like super powerful and can warp reality. And everyone's like, okay, so we don't know where she is for 4 years. And that's somehow okay.
She's a lady. They're not worried about her.
Yeah. If she stubs her toe, she's going to go crazy and destroy all curbs in the world or something.
You all have discovered all the reasons why Wanda is also sort of doesn't make sense in the comics because she's so powerful. She can control everything.
If you hit her in the head with a rock by accident, as in Endgame, she just gets knocked out and she has no
down like a sack of potatoes.
Yeah, there's no backup magic defense spells going on in these movies.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I also want to mention, again, divorced from the comics, because the comics, like, if they want to do changes from the comics, I'm okay with it. It's just, it's a different medium. It's a different kind of story they want to tell. But here, I just kept thinking there is a version of this story where Wanda is essentially driven mad with grief and is trying desperately to find any way to get her kids back, where you connect enough of the dots that she makes some bad decisions, like in WandaVision. Honestly, she makes a bunch of bad decisions that harm people, and it's horrific, and she's trying to deny it, but she has to realize it. And that's kind of what I wanted here. I kind of wanted her to have that grief and have maybe some denial and have her trying to solve the problem in what she thought was a good way. But of course, when she just visits Stephen Strange and says, "Ha ha, behold, I am evil." It's like, all right, I guess. Okay.
Yeah, that's the thing, because there's a historical, like, sexist trope of it's like the mother, childless mother that's driven mad by grief. Mm-hmm. And that crops up in so much media. And it's like, oh, yay, we're going to reuse that trope. There we go. Okay, boom, slaughter in. Mm-hmm. And it's just, yeah.
Plays into the whole, like, the only thing that matters to women is their children, and
yes,
that's their entire identity.
And their robot husband.
When she's near the Book of Vishanti, and she, you know, the Wanda of 616 is knocked out of her, and she goes, "My boys," and like, wait, you're in the nexus of all universes. You don't know why you're here. You don't know why you're injured. You don't know what happened. And your first and I understand. Look, I'm a parent. I understand if I might be concerned if I knew my children were in danger. But simply being apart from them and being in the neck. If I found myself, listen, all of you, if you found yourself at the nexus of all realities, and you worried about your children, what would you do? Would you try to figure out why you're there first, or would you go, "My children"? And I don't know.
Probably not shout out.
Was she aware of what was going on while her brain and body were hijacked? Because we get this little
another thing that's
illusion
not clear.
When Charles Xavier is there and he's trying to pull her out, that she's trapped. And I guess the idea is that she's trapped in a way that prevents her from taking charge again. So maybe she's put the... I feel like in order to have goodwill for this movie, you kind of have to do a lot of heavy lifting with yes, but, and yes, and yes, here's the explanation.
Well, I have a lot of goodwill for this movie, and my goodwill for this movie is...
I have goodwill for, like, the Sam Raimi touches. I just feel like a lot of this is really sloppily done.
I think the Wanda stuff is sloppily done. I'm not too concerned. Like, again, she's being possessed, and she's in a metaphorical, you know, heap of rocks that she can't get out of. And, you know, I'm not too concerned about her awareness of what she is when she's in there. But I agree that the moment she snaps out of it and she says, "My children," it's like, oh, boy. Okay, we're still doing this? All right.
I've seen every MCU movie and most of the series, but I'm not invested in them particularly. Mm. So, like, when WandaVision started, I needed the previously on to tell me that she had taken the time stone out of Vision's head and then the time went backwards or whatever. I did not like Endgame. So this movie, I'm like, oh, Wanda's a villain. Okay. And that's as much thought as I put into it. That may be as much thought as they put into it.
And I think that's the only real way to accept that part of this movie is to just you just need to shrug and say, okay, I guess, because that's all you can do.
Oh, to her point though, and to your point, Monty, there is the funny thing in Endgame, or not funny, but the tragic thing in Endgame is like, okay, well, if you go to Vormir and you die, you can't come back. But that's not what happened to Vision, and then Gamora is allowed to come back. So there's this weird no one can come back logic. And so when she says, I feel like, again, sometimes the people watching the film are yelling through the voices of the character. And Wanda says, you know, basically, you gave the time stone to Thanos and that was okay. He's like, well, we were at war. She's like, all right, but when you do things, it's good and you're the hero. When I do anything, it's bad, even though I essentially sacrificed my life partner for no reason and then was told, we'll never get him back. That's how the universe works. You're like, but Gamora, nah. It'll never get him back.
Yeah. Yeah, I also had a little bit of a problem with the sorcery is okay, witchcraft is bad. which one is coded female and which one is coded male? Well,
picked up on that, huh?
Did a sorcerer say that? Yes. Why, yes, actually, yes.
Did a sorcerer write this script?
Yeah, no, I thought that, I laughed at that because it was like, yeah, but oh no, it's a witchcraft. That's bad. I'm like, yeah, okay, if you say so.
I think the thing that makes me the saddest about it is just that WandaVision got me excited for more development of the character and seeing more Wanda. And like, yeah, I guess I did get to see more Wanda, even if there's not much development of the character. But now I feel like, you know, yes, I know they can bring anybody back, blah, blah, blah. It's a comic book movie. But they made it feel, you know, fairly final, at least for a little while, that she's we're not going to see her very soon. And like, so I'm not going to get my Wanda and, you know, White Vision story anytime real soon. I'm grumpy.
Oh, yeah. And they set up the trope. You can't get stuff from other universes because it makes universes go boom, except America Chavez is okay to be in this universe.
Well, she's in all the universes.
Exactly. Or in
And the incursions are a reference to New Avengers storyline. It's actually really great. And I think it's intriguing that they're going, that they may be going there with, with this whole section of it. Yeah, I think it is. It's a frustration. And I wonder, we were talking at the very beginning of the show about how Doctor Strange was supposed to come before Spider-Man and then they made it after. My guess, and I hate to say this, but my guess is this movie was written way before WandaVision. And WandaVision, they were told to land the plane with the Darkhold, and WandaVision that the showrunner of WandaVision had more empathy for and sympathy for Wanda than Michael Waldron did, because I believe Michael Waldron wrote this and then wrote Loki, right? Like movie time is different from TV time, and then you put in the pandemic and it gets even weirder, and it feels kind of like that, like WandaVision was not, this was not a reaction to WandaVision. This was literally, WandaVision was nothing but a few bullet points when this was written.
When they made this, they didn't know how, not only did they not know how WandaVision would be received, they didn't really know what WandaVision was going to be.
Yeah.
Oh, can you imagine the horror then? They're like, oh no, people sympathize with Wanda.
Oh, no. They made her too likable. What are we going to do?
No. Exactly. That's why I'm laughing now.
They made Catherine unlikable and nobody minds her being a villain.
Oh, I have a question about that. Now that Wanda's all crushed, does that mean that the spell she put on Agatha is done? God.
Yes.
You know, learning the timing of it makes me in one way feel a little bit better, but in another way feel a little bit worse, because I feel like when you have as much juice behind you as the MCU, you could take one more pass at it and do something just make it, even out those edges like a little bit.
Yeah.
And my least favorite part of Spider-Man No Way Home was the inciting incident for the multiversal stuff in that movie. Seemed really dumb to me. And like, so the you know, moving this movie around for that, like, I think it would have worked better. So okay. I guess part of me just need to shrug at this is the way movies are made, and sometimes that makes things suck for me as a viewer. Meh.
The thing is, we could have possibly even like subbed in Agatha Harkness for Wanda in this film,
or anybody like, else. Well, literally,
my pitch, by the way, retroactively, so there's nothing I can do unless somebody's got a time machine, is that there's a third act twist, which is that this isn't our Wanda. It's another Wanda dreamwalking into her. The twist is like, why is she acting like this? And the answer is, it's not even her. It is the uber evil Wanda from some other universe, but no, it's her. Anyway,
it's not Secret War. We know that because the Skrulls can't do that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective, unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch, Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
There's a rest of a movie here, and like I said, I like the rest of the movie.
Yay!
I want to touch on America Chavez because Sarah mentioned something, and I want Sarah to have her way here, but I want to underline something I said before, which is I kind of don't care if they change things from the comics. They have literally taken the name America Chavez and applied it to an entirely different character than the character who exists in the comics. Not the same powers, not the same ethnic origin, just a totally different person who they called America Chavez.
Yep. That's weird. My major point. And I realize this is totally inconsistent from my previous point, which was like the Wanderer and this is the MCU Wanderer and not Wanderer. I love America Chavez in the comic books. Her running through Young Avengers, having her own comic book series has been brilliant. I think the spoiler alert, I'm thinking about some setting up here for Young Avengers because we've got hints towards Wiccan where because there's at Wondergore. I keep thinking it's Weathertop. I don't know. One of the friezes in the wall is of Wiccan. And you see it, Wonder Woman is caressing it at one point. She doesn't make any mention to it, but it's Wiccan. And so we've got Wiccan, we've got America Chavez, we've got apparently there's a rumor that we're getting Hulkling in the Marvels coming up in next year.
And then you've got Ms. Marvel.
And you got Ms. Marvel. So you've got Young Avengers being set up. But anyway, that's regardless. I love America Chavez. She's confident, she's assertive, she's arrogant to the point of being annoying and rude and blunt, and she can literally punch holes in the sides of mountains. She's strong, she can do all this kind of stuff. I loved her as a character because she's a bit of she has this amazing character. So therefore, when we had this film and we were like, oh my goodness, we're getting America Chavez in the MCU, I was like, woohoo! And yeah, as Jason mentioned, this isn't that America Chavez at all. Different character, different personality, completely different ethnicity. She's effectively, she was a MacGuffin disguised as a character.
I feel like she is a character and has a little bit of character development, but she is barely more than a MacGuffin, right?
Well, a MacGuffin doesn't do anything. Yes. She at least sends you through time and space and stuff.
Yeah, it felt like an origin, like a low-key, like a backdoor pilot for whatever's going to happen with her, if anything.
Sure, but in this, her role is mostly to be the thing that the villain is trying to get. But she is more than just a MacGuffin. But Sarah's exactly right. I had that same thought, which is like, wow, she's like a character who doesn't know she's a MacGuffin, or knows and is against it. But like,
she's effectively a damsel.
Yes.
She's a damsel.
The actress Xochitl Gomez is so great in it.
Oh yeah,
I think she's so wonderful, and she has such great chemistry with Wong and Strange and those three actors together. Yeah. And I'm like, they could do two wizards and a teenage superhero show.
Oh man,
that was just like around New York, and it would be incredibly, like that bit in the diner was so sharp and funny.
Oh
so
yeah, that was great.
I wasn't as invested in the original America Chavez. I know the character only a little bit, and I thought, wow, this is sort of is an introduction. She doesn't know her powers, and Ted Lasso just has to tell her what to do, and then she has her powers. So it worked out at the end.
I don't know if Stephen Strange, if we could say necessarily that he has a big character progression in this movie, but one of the things that I really like about this movie, in a way, I'm going to argue that he sort of does. But it's not about him. It's about people's perception of him and maybe his perception
of
himself.
It's important.
But I really like is we are introduced to this movie with a Doctor Strange who is going to kill America Chavez because he can't save her. And he's going to save the multiverse and he's going to kill her. And then when she meets our Doctor Strange, she's like, oh boy, like, I don't trust you. I don't like you. And by the end of the movie, we have several people in the Illuminati, and then ultimately America say to him, you're not that guy. You are a better guy than that. And I think that that's like, there's something about, like, you know, his origin story and living up to reputation and being blamed for the acts of his alternate. I mean, who among us has not been blamed for the acts of our alternate universe counterparts?
So many times.
I thought that was kind of nice, where he's got a lot of self-doubt about, like, am I bad? Am I going to be bad? Do I have the potential to be bad? And in the end, America Chavez says, no, you're not like that guy. You know, and she gives him the stamp of approval. And I really liked that. I thought that was an interesting thing for Doctor Strange to kind of have to kind of go through and be judged at the end, and be judged favorably. Like, our guy is not that guy. Our guy is the guy who saved the universe and sacrificed himself to, in order to have the one reality where Thanos loses and all of that stuff. I thought that was really good. And I like America Chavez. I think she's fun. You know, she's her role here. It is an origin story. She's basically like, she's got to get a pep talk at the end, and then she's like, okay, now I can be a superhero. And so she does.
I think it's good for Doctor Strange to have somebody to talk to who doesn't respect him.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I will admit fully that I am just in on basically anything Benedict Cumberbatch does. So I take whatever I say with a giant grain of salt. But I really, really love Doctor Strange as a character in the MCU. And maybe that's a big part of it. But I also like, I'm also a sucker for the real, you know, the jerky guy with the heart of gold, which, believe me, has bit me in real life. There were a couple of scenes that really hit me. Like, I keep thinking about him saying, I love you in every universe. Like, I literally gasped when that happened. I am the person this movie is, that half of the movie is made for. So him having those teeny tiny, like, it's not big character development, but to me, it's important character development. Him talking to himself about his kid sister dying and not being able to save her, and like that being a formative moment for him in his jerkiness. Like, all of those pieces really, really worked for me. So when it came to the end and she's like, yeah, you're not that guy, I'm like, yeah, you're not that guy. And part of the reason you're not that guy is because you just went through all of this and saw the other versions of you. And that's helping reinforce the fact that you're not that guy. And I just thought that was a kind of nice cyclical way to treat the character.
I like the sci-fi weirdness of the fact that when he's at Christine's wedding, which is a funny, very funny scene, by the way, where there's the guy next to him talking to him about it. He's like, well, you didn't get even better.
Who's from the first movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. The second time around, I'm like, oh, wait, why does Dr. Strange, why would he sit in next to the awkward guy? And then I realized watching the second time, he doesn't sit next to him. He sits next to a random guy who looks nervous, who shuffles out of the way. And the old rival literally walks over that guy to sit next to have that confrontation.
So that's fun. And there's that moment where it reveals that it's her wedding. It's like, guys, when you showed him walking in, I was like, I know what this is. I know that this is his ex-girlfriend's wedding. This is what we're doing here. But like, a way that a weird sci-fi fantasy movie can do stuff on emotional levels that you might not otherwise see is, I love that he admits that he loves her in all dimensions and universes to her alternate, right? He can tell Christine, because it's Christine, but it's not his Christine. And I love how sweet and sad that is, that he can't admit it to her because he needs to let her get on with her life. And also he doesn't want to admit it. But to this Christine, he's like, yeah, I'm not happy. And it kills me that you're with somebody else. And that, and like, I love that's the moment that he lets it out.
I was kind of hoping the reason he did that was because he knows it's a real jerkstar move to tell a woman who's getting married that you still have the feelings for her and throwing complications at it. But you know what? But, I like this interpretation better than.
But he wants
maybe
to let
he
it
had
out.
A moment of social awareness.
No, I think he knows that it's a jerkstar move, but then suddenly he's confronted with this other Christine, and they're in this super difficult situation in this terribly messed up universe, and he's like, "Yeah, you're right." You're right. I can admit it to you. I can't admit it to her, but I'll admit it to you that this is happening. So I thought that was a really nice use. Also, by the way, I just wanted to say, I assumed that we were getting a Rachel McAdams cameo in this movie. I love the fact that there's another Christine who is there with the secret stuff with the Illuminati and all, and that she tags along with Steven for a large part of the movie. Because I really liked Rachel McAdams in the first Doctor Strange movie, and I thought, well, they can't bring her back for more than a cameo. And multiverse is the answer to many of these questions.
She's quite wonderful. Quite wonderful cast. I mean, you got to love... I feel like I love, except, and I don't mean to attack child actors. I don't think they're given a lot to work with, the Timmy and Bobby, whatever their names are. The ostensible the purpose twins. Of this entire
McGuffin
film.
Twins, yes. Yeah.
McGuffin twins. But just so much
ice
fun,
cream,
fine
ice cream,
little work.
It's so nice. Ice cream.
The thing I
stop
like
now.
In the... We already signed
yesterday,
Jason.
Surely there's a multiverse where they were murdered right after that.
Oh, my God. The thing I like about Marvel films, and I tell people who don't like superhero films, I'm like, I'm not so much invested in all the character stuff, although I'm a nerd, so of course, or a geek, sorry. So I do learn and know all that stuff. But what I love is they make room for these little character beats. They make a little space in a crazy huge film. They make space to have personal moments, that running thing where like they're in the middle, they're nearly dead, and Wong's like, you know, it is old ancient custom to bow to the sorcerer's feet. Beautifully, but it's like the relationship is founded on that kind of pressure release. It didn't seem forced. It wasn't like, now it's time for us to be jokey. It's like they need that, and they have that relationship
and it
trust
gets paid
together.
Off when he bows at him at the end, right?
Wonderful.
Yes, see, emotional. More development.
Yeah, the middle where he tells him, you should bow to me, and he's like, yeah, that's not gonna happen. The middle, other people bow to him, and Wong's like, see? And then at the end, he bows to him. It's just a nice bit of construction. I love it.
Yeah, this is why this is my, like, I want my Wong movie.
Wong.
I want my Wong movie. Like, my Wong series of him going, like, roping in, like, in a way, doing what you're doing, Jason, of bringing in podcasters to have an event, and he's just hopping between superheroes to try to team them up together, and that's Wong just like, oh, God, they're, like, herding sheep all the time because that's his job, so... Yeah.
Thanks to New Zealand for mentioning sheep, by the way.
I didn't say anything.
I would watch the Disney Plus series about Wong.
A series. It has to be a series. Yes,
every episode, he finds some other MCU character he has to interact with because he is the glue that holds the MCU together.
He's like the most interesting 100%. Man in the world. That could just be the series.
Yeah.
He gets to sigh. He has to sigh like Kif in Futurama, as he saves like yet another superhero.
Sorcerer Supreme stories. That's
well,
what it
we
is.
Don't have Stan Lee anymore, so we could just make Benedict Wong the cameo in every movie.
Right on. Let's do it.
We
all agree.
Then we go. Then he goes back to the New York Sanctum, and he's got like one of these big white boards up with pieces of post-its, trying to track where everybody is.
Okay, some other things that I wanted to mention that I really like in this movie. There's a fight when she goes to Kamar-Taj, the home of the sorcerers, that is a very conventional Marvel movie fight that I found kind of boring. I like the weird fights better than I like the conventional fights. I like the monster who gets impaled through the eye again because it's gross.
Oh, I felt sorry for that.
Yeah. I did too. Well, I did the whole time. I'm thinking, why don't you send it back where it came from? And they're like, no, we're gonna kill it.
Do you feel bad for Bruce Campbell for Pizza Popper or Pizza Ball?
Yes. Three weeks of hitting himself in the face.
Pizza Ball was actually my takeaway from that. I want to see if there's a way to make Pizza Ball.
I had to have a whole moral discussion with my 15-year-old and explain why this is a bad thing. And they're like, well, it's not so bad. They did like, no, he didn't pay. The guy was in the right. And three, and like, no, it's, we have a moral discussion around that.
Well, you see, there's nothing Sam Raimi loves more than torturing Bruce Campbell.
Yes, exactly. That's really the answer. So among the things that I like, I mentioned the visuals. I love that they go through a bunch of multiverses in a scene that really looks great, and including the one where they turn into goo for a while, which I thought was really great. I love the fight. I love the fight with the musical notes.
Yes.
Because that was
brilliant.
What is that about? And it just looks good and sounds interesting and is a thing. One of my favorite things in the original Doctor Strange movie is there's a fight that takes place while time is running backward. And I thought to myself, I have never seen anything like this in a movie before. And like, I love it when there's a little moment where I'm like, look at that. That is so novel and interesting. And the music fight was like that. I thought that was really great. And then I just got to say it. the end fight where they're the moment where he says, "I didn't say alive," and he brings up the moldering corpse that was killed in the first scene, and then
the
we get a whole
zombie hand reaches out from the grave, and the lightning crashes. Yes.
And he gets, Sam Raimi. Hello.
And he gets haunted by ghosts, and they're like, "No, the ghosts. You could use them as weapons." Like, oh, great! Oh. And so then dead Doctor Strange comes with his ghost patrol to fight wings. Wanda at the end. And I'm like, what is this? That's why I kind of love this movie, despite the issues with Wanda, is because the stuff that's weird is so weird. And I love going to see a Marvel movie and being like, what? Because it could be so easy for them to be super boring. And this movie is not that. It's not that. It is so strange.
I liked the Sam Raimi-ish parts, like the parts where you just like lean in full Sam Raimi. Those were my favorite parts, where he's just, it's the Looney Tunes but with gore, or it's the Looney Tunes but with zombies. Like that stuff is great. And I like when there's that certain exuberance that comes through, and it's not just all magic and rules and this. Like, I also really love the Illuminati stuff because I love the battle scene.
That was the other thing I was going to mention. I mean, the Kamertage fight because it feels conventional, and like anybody who saw Falcon and Winter Soldier knows that there is like I want to go back to that as the like it looks like. Every Marvel, everything. It's very conventional in every way. And the Kamertage fight is kind of like that. And I didn't find that interesting. But almost everything else that was action oriented in this movie felt just off, either a little or a lot, enough for me to find it all interesting. The other thing that I loved about this movie is I loved their little visit to the place with the statue of Stephen Strange that has the Illuminati in it. I love that we get Illuminati. I managed to not be spoiled on all of it. I didn't know John Krasinski was going to be Reed Richards in it, which was great. Patrick Stewart's in the trailer, so I knew it was going to be Patrick Stewart.
I didn't watch the trailer, so that was really exciting for me.
Oh, Erica, what was it like? Tell us what it was like not knowing.
Yeah, in the Super Bowl ad, you hear his voice, and you're like, oh, okay, it's going to be Professor.
Yeah, and that's, I think I had that moment, like, however excited you were seeing the trailer and hearing his voice in the trailer, you hear his voice first in the movie as well. And I literally said no effing way to the screen. Yeah. And then he comes on and I was like, and Steven, who was editing a podcast next to me, is like, what just happened?
If you have subtitles on, it says 1997 X-Men theme plays, which is
from the cartoon.
So.
My husband's a huge fan of that. And I was like, is that really the theme? And he's like, yeah, it is.
Hungarian TV yellow, show theme that was...
he has his big yellow thing. So that and Reed Richards, we get Maria Rambeau as Captain Marvel, which is a fun little nod to the Captain Marvel movie, an alternate version of Captain Marvel. You get Black Bolt.
I loved Black Bolt because I always feel bad for properties that everyone hates. Like, I watched The Inhumans. It was terrible.
Yeah.
But I'm so happy that they reference it and let him come back. It's like seeing Hayden Christensen on Obi-Wan Kenobi. I'm like, hey, good for you.
Also, it's Anson Mount, who we all like now because he's Captain Pike. So we all like him again, even though he was in that terrible Inhumans show.
And I didn't even know that. Wow.
And then Peggy Carter as Captain Carter, who we did see in the What If series, is here. And who doesn't want to see Peggy Carter again? And then, you know, I love seeing them. I love the revelation of that. I have to say, when Mordo says the Illuminati, Lauren just snorted. She's like, really? I'm like, well, you know, they call themselves that. So yeah, you can roll your eyes at it. And then the best part, they all are horribly murdered.
Black Bolt particularly. Black Bolt is like, what mouth to Black Bolt? And
I have like, no mouth, and I must scream and thereby melt my head.
Half his head falls in. I'm like, okay,
Sam Raimi. I love the blatant fan service of bringing these characters in. Like, I'm excited to see Agent Carter. I love the Agent Carter show.
Yeah.
And then she gets bisected by her own shield. Like,
oh my gosh.
Good for you, Sam Raimi.
It was such
a Sam Raimi death. I loved it.
Yeah.
Two great Black Bolt facts. First, they say his whole name, which I think our friend of the show, Saladin Ahmed, put in his Black Bolt series. I'm not sure. I know canonically his name is Blackagar Boltigan,
yes.
But I think it hadn't been it had not been mentioned recently until Saladin's run.
Which it goes back to Jack Kirby, but yeah.
But it's a great moment in that comic book series, and they do that. And the other is, I think Anson Mount had the smuggest expression I've
He's
ever seen on screen. It was so perfect.
So good.
Before his mouth was, it was great. Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
Yeah. Although they didn't make use of Anson Mount's hair, which was
that's
a shame.
True.
He
can't.
He has
a Star Trek property.
Hair.
That's a Star Trek property. Yeah. and Reed Richards gets shredded.
So
gross.
It was such a badass sequence when she's like, "Do your children still have a mother?" And he's all, "Yes."
And you know what makes that whole what makes that whole sequence better is that it keeps coming back to Mordo and Doctor Strange in the other room, and Doctor Strange is like, they're all dying out there. You gotta let me out. And Mordo's like, no, I'll never let you out. And he's like, yeah, you're Mordo. That's all right. It's great.
Mordo, you are focusing on one specific tree. You don't even realize there's a forest.
I think they spent their post-production time that they could have spent changing the script around, just lining up cameos.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, John Krasinski, can you come in for a day? Yes. Great. Come on in.
I'm not 100% convinced that he isn't actually signed to a contract to actually be Reed Richards, but he doesn't have to be. I mean, that's the beauty of it. He doesn't have to be.
He's like the worn down Reed Richards that happens in some of the later
I don't know
books
anything about that character.
He's not like super arrogant. He's just really
I don't know anything about that character, but I love him now. Like this version, if it's anything like this and they do a movie, I am 100% in.
I like John Krasinski. I'm just saying, he never saw anybody else in the cast.
No, that little group of Illuminati might, you know, but you're right. Probably not. Probably they were all just acting alone. I think
totally
Patrick Stewart, you know, it's Patrick Stewart, right? He brings the gravitas to it. But I think that the idea that Charles Xavier, he's the one who says, no, I think this Doctor Strange can do it. Again, talking about that character arc that I mentioned before, he has some faith in this Doctor Strange versus his own. And then he has that moment where he tries to go into Wanda's mind as well. And then, of course, he is blown apart. But it's good.
Mm-hmm.
That callback to WandaVision where she's trapped under the wreckage of her home in Sokovia again. You know, we keep coming back to Sokovia, even though it doesn't exist anymore canonically in the MCU.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would actually say that probably that scene with the Illuminati was some of my favorite bits of the entire movie. I know it's more conventional, but I really enjoyed that fight scene between Maria Rambeau, Hayley Atwell, and Wanda. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was fun.
I agree. I mean, it was, it was a conventional fight, but
weird.
What was different was that they're all... It's like, what? Like, it's the wrong characters, right? That's what I loved about it. And seeing Peggy doing the full Captain America thing is great. Like, that's so...
Oh, that was awesome.
Bouncing
that was so
the shield around and the whole thing.
I'm so glad Hayley Atwell still gets to be Peggy Carter occasionally.
Right?
Oh, man, I hope they do a whole... They don't have a Captain Carter series plan, do they? But the What If episode and then the last part of that series, I was just like, it's like with Benedict Wong. It's like the character is rich enough and they made her three-dimensional. She has a whole life and then she can do all these different things. I would love to see her in more, but I don't know if they have that planned. Why
I don't
not?
Know. This is the beauty of this, too, is that the Illuminati sequence allows them, because they have the rights to X-Men and Fantastic Four and haven't yet done anything with it, it allows them to play with those characters without actually having to commit to anything, which I think is great. Like, they could put Professor X in the movie. They don't have, I mean, they will do X-Men movies at some point, certainly not with Patrick Stewart, but like, it doesn't matter. Just like they brought back, again, I wonder what the impact would have been if this happened before they brought back various Spider-Men. If that sequence had been different, but either way, it's just a kick. The fact that they all die, like, I love that. It's like, yes, not only is it great that we show you all these alternate people who are very impressive and call themselves the Illuminati, but then they will all die.
I felt a little bad for Wanda in 838 though, because I was concerned that after all this happened, people were like, yeah, yeah, talk it, tell it to the sergeant that there's traveling young woman.
I had that same thought. She's like, oh, I woke up where there was a glowing book and I jumped over. I used my little magic powers because I've got them, you know, because I do, but I'm fine because I've got kids. I went over to the door and got through the portal. And then I'm just walking around and like every major superhero is a bloody spot on the floor. And
I thought, except Mordo. Mordo's not going to speak on her behalf, though.
Yeah. It's like, lady, you know, yes, return to your universe. That's fine. But I just got to warn you.
Oh,
it's really ugly in those rooms you're about to go through.
Yeah.
It's really not good.
Nice touch of her destroying all the Ultrons, though. Right. That was pretty good on the way through.
And somebody killed them, and it was you, but it wasn't really you. And
whatever, she's going to be fine. She doesn't need to answer any questions because she's got superpowers and can take her kids and go wherever she wants.
It's true.
And they'll immediately lose track of her, just like they do in every universe.
Exactly.
Yep, the idea. Oh, we've mislaid this extremely powerful witch. We don't know. That's right. Don't judge.
No, Mordo's like, she doesn't matter. Pay attention to me. Mordo.
She's at
Sorceress Supreme. Now get me a Crunchwrap Supreme.
So, she's always at 123 Any Street in Westview because that's where she apparently lived in all these other universes.
Monty mentioned that this is not a sequel to Doctor Strange, and I wanted to mention one way where it is definitely not, which is Mordo in Doctor Strange is an interesting character because he isn't quite as villainous as he is doubting in Stephen Strange. And he sort of, it leads him down a path, which is unfortunate and all. And it's very clear that Chiwetel Ejiofor is going to be back as Mordo to be like, I'll stop you, Doctor Strange. And in this movie, Mordo appears, but not that Mordo. That Mordo is, I don't know, out there somewhere still planning or something. And that was the thing that I kept thinking is like, oh yeah, there's all sorts of plot lines from that Doctor Strange movie that are just left on the floor. It's like they brought back the actor to play an alternate version of the character. Forget about that other guy.
It's, like, okay. It's kind of a nice reminder, like, hey, remember this guy?
Remember
he
Mordo?
Exists. He's different in your universe. So now when we bring him back, you will have been reminded and remember that he still exists.
Right. It is a nice twist.
I've already forgotten about him.
I do like, I like that, you know, Stephen Strange has a statue and he's so like, oh yes, I am a hero everywhere. And then that moment where he finds out, no, we killed him. Like we with his permission, because he had gone too far. And that momentary flash where it's like Thanos is dead and they're all standing around is such a weird, strange moment where you're like, what is happening? And this is why I like this movie, is I liked all the weird stuff in it, and I just sort of like had to accept that there was the stuff with Wanda and how she was handled that I disliked, because that's it. I didn't like that part, but I liked all of the strange, weird, odd, whatever, strange visuals and decisions, and the fact that they introduce a whole bunch of alternate superheroes and kill them all. And like, we talk about Marvel movies. One of the things we talk about is they are very successful. One of the things that I think makes them more successful is that they don't all feel exactly the same. And the ones I like the most are the ones who have something about them that is unique to them. And whether it's like Ant-Man, which is like, oh, it's kind of a funny movie and kind of a heist movie. I like that. That's a different kind of movie. This is very different, like the first Doctor Strange movie, because it's weird and it's got that Sam Raimi touch of kind of the horror, horrific visuals and Bruce Campbell too. So, you know, that's in the end, I end up giving this a thumbs up with the big caveat about not liking what happens with Wanda, because there's just so much weird, delightfully weird stuff in it that is enough for me. We'll go around. How does everybody else sort of like give their final judgment about the movie as a whole? Lisa?
I had really enjoyed watching it in the theater, and I think part of that is because the surprise and delight of seeing the Sam Raimi touches on the big screen. And the Illuminati, the surprise and the freshness really made it a great viewing experience. I rewatched the movie again before this podcast in preparation for the podcast. I didn't enjoy it as much because no more surprises. And I had time to notice the things like, hey, that doesn't make sense. Or, hey, I don't like how they did that. So I think this is the kind of movie where if you haven't seen it, you'll have a lot of fun watching it, mm-hmm. but it may not be a movie that you return to and, mm-hmm. and rewatch the same way that you might rewatch, say, the Avengers Assemble a scene in Endgame, or I've watched Ragnarok a couple times now because there's just enough in that movie that delights me every time, not because of surprise, but just because of the way it's set up and delivered.
I can see watching the Illuminati get killed again and again.
oh yeah. No, that's going to happen a lot, I think. Honestly, like if they want to break that out as just like a short.
Yeah.
I would watch that. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Erica?
Or the part where he makes the cloak. Oh. I love that part too.
Oh, sure. Erica, what do you think?
I really, really like this movie with a heaping side of rage.
All right. We're in the same place. Yeah.
That's how I feel about it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Monty?
I watched this movie largely as a Sam Raimi movie, not as an MCU movie, because the Blank Check podcast has been going through the films of Sam Raimi, and I've been watching along with it. So when I watched it, I was like, here we go with Sam Raimi. And I'm, yeah, look at that camera move. Look at that zombie. Ooh, yeah. So, you know, I enjoyed it. I will say, would you prefer like Jurassic World Dominion or Morbius? Come on. This is a fine, fine brand extension.
I also think, Sam Raimi is a really great director. And the fact that he took this job, I think, is interesting and maybe says something about, I mean, maybe Marvel was desperate because they lost the directors that were on it before, probably because they didn't like the instructions they were being given by Marvel. But the fact that Sam Raimi walked in the door and says, yeah, I'll do it, I'm like, I wonder whether he had a little upper hand to make the movie more like he liked it, or if they had the wisdom to say, yeah, this, have you seen this script? It's a great Sam Raimi movie. Do it. But I would like to see Marvel continue to, or start to, if they haven't been doing it up till now, embrace the idea that like the MCU has enough size and variance to let Sam Raimi play with a story and do his thing and not have it feel like it was extruded from the, you know, industrial press at the movie factory. And this movie does not feel like that, mostly. So that I agree with you. I like to see Sam Raimi, you know, because Sam Raimi could have done an MCU movie or any name director and you wouldn't feel like they were in it, right? Like you couldn't feel their artistic touch. And I don't feel that about this movie. I can tell who made this movie. Yeah. Sarah, what's your overall thought?
I'm probably going to give it a thumbs down, but it's a thumbs down with pizza balls.
Yeah, nice touch.
Yeah, because it's like, yes, I can watch the Illuminati get killed over and over again, which probably says negative things about my personality. But there were things I really enjoyed in here. There are those moments where Wanda does, like the moment where she... where she confronts Strange in the field about the hypocrisy, where I loved that moment where she says to Black Bolt, what mouth? Mm. And it's just dropped there, and it's just for, and I'm sure Sam Raimi let that hang for like a second before they cut to Black Bolt. And that was good. And there was all these bits in here, but ultimately it's the characters here. I wanted the characters to do more, to be more, and they didn't give that to me. I was talking to my girlfriend over the weekend, and she said, "Oh, the new Doctor Strange film has dropped on Disney Plus. Should I watch it?" And I went, "Oh, because like she doesn't know the comic books." And I said, "Okay, it is big dumb fun, and you might enjoy it for that reason." She did enjoy WandaVision, so I'm a little bit concerned that she's going to go, "Wait, this wasn't my Wanda," but it is big dumb fun, so hence thumbs down with pizza balls.
That's fair. Thumbs down with pizza balls is another person's thumbs up, because the pizza balls, it depends on, it really depends on how you value pizza balls.
Put the more pizza balls, on your thumbs.
How do the pizza balls work?
I need to know. It's a mystery of Earth 838,
I want,
right?
Those pizza balls, seriously. Yeah. If
it's a street food, you're gonna get cheese and sauce all over your hands.
No, that's the secret, Monty. It's
Yeah.
and do they come with pineapple?
Mm. Well, if it's a just universe, they do. Glenn, what's your final
Paging
judgment?
Paging Joe Steele. I think I share the maybe the majority opinion here is I'm thumbs up with reservations because I too, you know, I loved WandaVision, thought it was a great series, and I felt like this movie had a lot of sort of logical problems and Wanda's character problems. But if I ignored the fact that she was acting in a way that was inconsistent with what I thought was her character, I enjoyed it quite a lot. Watching it a second time, I had the same reaction that it, or a different reaction rather, that it dragged more than I remembered. But then we kind of move on to these interesting set pieces and it's like, oh, I have the bat cloak, the bat wings made of dead spirits to look forward to. And oh, there's a redemption thing coming in. Oh, we get the good, you know, there's an after credit scene. So, and the Illuminati so great kind of anchoring the middle. So I liked it. I've now watched it twice. I don't know when I will watch it a third time. And I have watched many other of the Marvel movies multiple times. It makes me actually want to go back and watch What If, in fact, for another time.
Yeah, we didn't mention the post-credit sequence, but there is one, and it involves Thea, who is a character who has been entangled with Doctor Strange for a long time, and it's Charlize Theron.
Whoa!
Basically saying, come with me to the Dormammu dimension.
Yeah.
Interesting, because the subtitles said Clea.
Oh, sorry, that's right. It's Clea. But she's like a longtime, like sometimes girlfriend of Doctor Strange, actually.
Oh, yeah, I am in.
Right, it's Clea, not Clea.
He loved, what's her name? And universes.
There's a lot of love going around.
Yeah, but she's married in his universe, so you got to move on.
They set it up because like he's now over Christine, so he can move on.
He can move on, that's right. And then the multiverse drops Clea into his life, and she's got a thing that cuts through dimensions, and she's taking him to the dark dimension, I guess, and we'll just see what happens.
He's got an extra eyeball, and he's got all the love for Clea.
Yeah, something like
that. Yeah, when one door closes, another door opens.
Yeah, and when one eye closes, two more open, I guess. But Charlize Theron, nice to see her. I was like, oh, look, I guess she's got writing a check for Charlize Theron now. Great. All right, and that brings us to the end of this episode of The Incomparable. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. Thanks to my panel once more, and we will see you next time.